Think of an alibi.
Okay, it's been a couple of weeks. I want to dedicate today's sicha to a group of people, some of which I'll mention later. And the first person I want to mention now is Max Blazer. The sicha is going to be dedicated. Okay, I want to share with you an idea on the parsha, and then I want to build what I want to share with you off of that that concept. We read in this week's parsha, Yetzias Mitzrayim, certainly the last of the three makos, the last of the Eser makos, and then we're told that Bnei Yisrael is given a command to go ahead and bring the Pesach, the Korban Pesach, and on some level, that is a prerequisite for them to go ahead and leave Mitzrayim, is to bring the Korban Pesach. And Perek Beis of this parsha deals with the commands that are given to Bnei in conjunction with the Korban Pesach, and it is very, very striking how the mitzvahs that are involved in this process. Perek opens up, Vayomer Hashem Moshe v'el Aron v'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor ha'chodesh hazeh lo'achem rosh chodeshim rishonu lo'achem l'chodshei hashana. First, they were told that this month, Nisan, is Rosh Chodeshim. You have a mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh to sanctify the month. The first mitzvah that we find in the Chumash. And question number one is, what is the significance of HaChodesh HaZelachem as the first mitzvah? Josh, can you tap the Me'enna to your left and tell him right here? Josh, are we focused 1,000%? 1,000? X, no. Moshe, why don't you get a closer seat? It'll be closer to home. You want to sit right here? No, that's too far. Excellent. Okay. He's still in a very serious avelus for his beloved Ravens. Had a ridiculously pathetic season. What is the significance of that mitzvah? Then we're told. Moses told on that day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, he's told to tell the Jewish people that Be'esel HaChodesh, on the 10th of the month, I want everyone to collect the Yichulachem Seh LeBeis Avos. Every household gathers a Seh. And then we're told, you're going to hold on to that Seh. It's going to be 1 year old male Seh. You'll watch over that sef for a total of 4 days until you dalad nisan. You will sacrifice bein ha'abayim in the afternoon. You'll take the dam and you'll smear that dam on the doorpost. The achlu es habasa, not on the 14th, but the achlu es habasa ba'layla hazeh, at night specifically. And the question begs itself, why, what are these old mitzvahs all about? I understand why we'll have a mitzvah of Karban Pesach ledoros, to go ahead and commemorate Yitzias Mitzrayim, but why specifically now, in Mitzrayim, to take this, don't take it on the 14th, even though that's when it's going to be sacrificed, take it on the 10th. The command is given on the 1st, take it on the 10th, Achuz HaZalachem first, take it on the 10th, watch 4 days, sacrifice it when, Bein Arbaim specifically, but do not eat it then, wait till nightfall. What are these details all about? What is this mitzvah all about? And Mechilta says, one approach. The Mechilta suggests, you know why? All these details and this 4-day process. B'nai Yisrael, it was time. Hashem told Adam Avinu in the Bris Hamidah, you're going to be taken out of Mitzrayim. It's going to be a 400-year process, but you're going to come out at that destined time. And the date had arrived. But the Mechilta says, B'nai Yisrael was naked of mitzvot, devoid of mitzvot. The atah, arom ve'eriyah, you're naked of mitzvot. And therefore, says Mechilta, Hashem just needed them to start accruing some mitzvot. So he gave them this mitzvah of Karban Pesach, hachoz alachem, milah, which also was necessary, to go ahead and start to accrue some mitzvot. Get mitzvot under your belt, you'll have some merits, and now I can take you out of Mitzvah. But the question begs itself. If that's all it's about, just mitzvah accrual, so then maybe we should go ahead and understand why dafka this mitzvah? Why dafka a seh, a 1-year-old seh? Why take it on the 10th? What's the message of these mitzvahs in particular? What's the significance of mitzvah milah right now? What's the meaning of taking that dam on the doorpost? What's the meaning specifically of hachodesh hazeh lachem? Why these mitzvos in particular? And perhaps we can add further. As you take a look at these psukim and the other details of Karban Pesach, you will find a phenomenal degree of minutiae that the Torah seems to care a lot about. You'll go ahead and, when you go ahead and shecht this animal, you're going to have to go ahead and cook it up. And how do you cook it? Specifically roast it. And when you roast it, not just in any way, but you don't just go ahead and chop it up, chop the meat up, and throw it on the barbecue. But you have to roast it, what's called rosho al-kra'av. You stick a skewer into the mouth of the animal all the way through the innards, and you roast it whole. And then there's halacha, you can't break bones. And then there's halacha, you can't eat it raw, you can't have it cooked. Detail after detail. And then we're told at night you go ahead and eat it. The hanos haribenu aboker, you can't leave any, los haribenu aboker, you can't leave any over to the morning. Yes of no, sir. And if you did leave some over to the morning, which you're not allowed to do, there's a mitzvah sreif. Why all the details? As sometimes some of my talmidim ask, does Hashem really care? It's a good question. I'm going to suggest an answer, but before my answer, I want to tell you what the Sefer HaChinuch writes. Very famous Sefer HaChinuch, perhaps one of the most famous Sefer HaChinuch of all. Why do we need all the details? Don't break bones, roasted, no sar, just bring the Karban Pesach. Why all the details? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, he is so. Mitoch ha-ma'asim nimshachim ha-levavot. Sometimes, when you're not necessarily feeling it, when you don't necessarily have things working on the inside, says the Sefer HaChinuch, start doing. Start doing. Mitoch ha-ma'asim, do. Mitzvah, mitzvah, mitzvah. And then you know what's going to happen? When you start getting habituated in actions, in mitzvos, in ma'aseh, mitoch ha-ma'asim, from the actions,
the hearts will follow. Just keep doing it. I was learning this morning with my preceer, the non-chassidus guys. One of them says, Yesharim. We're talking about zrizus, alacrity. Doing things with speed, not being lazy. And he points out that really what Hashem wants is internally. We shouldn't be lazy people. He wants the heart, that we should be internally energized. But he points out sometimes we're not. And the cure for someone who's not, if he's not yet, doesn't have it on the inside. So says in the Masil Shem, same idea, outside in. So start working on running instead of walking. Become energized. Deal with your actions, and then sooner or later, you're not going to be a lazy person. I suggest to my shir that in the morning when they wake up, first of all, you should do what Rav Yosef did. Even at the age of 80 years old, he found it tough to wake up on a cold winter morning. And the story is told, it's written up in his Sefer's biography, the Sefer's called Hamasmid. At 80 years old, he would rip the blanket off his bed, off his body, because he knew if he didn't do that, it would be tough to get out of bed. You might not feel it, but do it. Get dressed, and I would recommend highly, especially if you're in Golda Nava Golda. You have about 100 yards to the Beis Medrash. Run to the Beis Medrash. Don't walk. Don't mosey in. But run in. It'll get your blood flowing. It'll get your heart pumping. And all of a sudden, when you get here, you'll be awake. You'll be up. If you're Merkaz, take the stairs. Two at a time, three at a time. Your blood will flow. Even if you're not so awake, it'll give. That's what the Maseil Sisham says. That's the Sefer Achinu. That's, he says, is why we have all the minutiae, all the details. But I would like to suggest another idea. Why these details? Why specifically this? So there's another Mechilta. And the parash of the Mechilta says, strikingly, that B'nai Yisrael, after 210 years, in Mitzrayim, basically, were Mitzrayim. They were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and they had sunk to the 49th level of Tumah, on a very, very low level. In fact, the Pasuk says, when they're told about the Karban Pesach, Mishchu Ukulachem Tzom. Literally, pull and take the Tzom. Why pull? Just take the Tzom. So the Mechilta has a drasha, Mishchu Yedeichem min ha'avodah zarah. Pull your hands away from avodah zarah. Ukulachem tzon, and take tzon to worship Hashem. They were enveloped and ensconced in avodah zarah Mitzrayim. Not only that, but can you imagine what it's like? Your father was a slave, your grandfather was a slave, your great-grandfather was a slave. Great-great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-grandfather. Seven generations of Avodah, 210 years, 30 years per generation. That's a very long history of slave. And if you have that lineage, a slave inside of you, there's not much going on in your life. You have a docile existence, passive. No sense of freedom, no sense of self-worth, self-esteem, self-confidence. The master who beats you daily says, jump, and your only response is how high. That's who Klal Yisrael was. Old devil is Zara and seven generations of slaves. And Hashem tells them, I have a mission for you. I want to give you a Torah, and I want you to fulfill a mission. But for this people to do that, it's a joke. They're subjugated by Mitzvah, they're defeated people. How do we go ahead and start to build this people? So Chazal tells us, what was this set in Mitzvah society? What did the seh represent? The seh represented the Mitzri deity. The seh was not the Mitzri deity, but it was a representation of the Mitzri deity. And Chazal tell us, they were told, take the seh on the 10th. And you look at the Midrash, Midrashim say, they were told to tie the seh to the bedposts. And what happens when the animal is tied to the bedposts? It starts making a lot of noise. It starts crying, braying. And here they were, the Mitzrim had their god, the representation of their god, tied up, seized by these petty slaves. And the Mitzrim are powerless to do anything about it. And then 4 days later, after this is going on in the face of the Mitzrim, the persecutors, and now all of a sudden the defeated people, start to step up and take that Mitzri god, tie it up. Now after 4 days, where the Mitzrim are powerless, they untie it. And they take it outside, and they take a big knife, and they slaughter it. It's not an easy thing to do after 210 years of slavery. Take the representation of your oppressor and slaughter it in front of their eyes. That starts to build a certain sense of confidence. It takes guts, it takes mesiris nefesh, but it starts to build them. But that's not enough. It doesn't stop there. Then they're told at night, take that animal. Don't throw it in a pot. What happens when you take that meat and throw it into a pot? It starts to dissolve and lose its form. Take it and roast it. What's the most intense form of bishul possible? You roast it on an open fire. That's an intense form of bishul. Don't chop it up. Keep it whole. So after you roast it, what does it look like? It still looks like a seh. That same representation of the Mitzri deity. But now it's roasted to a crisp. Don't break any bones. Make sure it looks exactly as it did when it's alive. In the face of the Mitzri, in the face of the oppressor, start to build confidence in the people. Turn them, a slow transformation from Avadim to Bnei Chorin. And then what are you going to do? You've roasted it, you've killed it, you've slaughtered it. Now you're going to go ahead and eat it. You're going to eat it, consume it, not leaving a single morsel over. 100%! Every last crumb, every last kazayis gets consumed. And if you can't, and if you didn't, then immediately, you have to burn it and reduce it to a pile of ash. The mitzvah of Korban Pesach was B'nai Yisrael's get out of jail free mitzvah. And it was designed to take a people that were avodim, slaves, denigrated, and defeated, and start to give them the power, the confidence to go ahead and pick themselves up. They were Egyptians. They were Ovd Avodah Zarah, assimilated on the 49th level of Tumah, to now extricate themselves from that society and start to build themselves. When they take this Mitzri god and destroy it, kill it, roast it, eat it, and then burn it into ash, they're making a very firm announcement. And who was that announcement to? It's Machlokas. Because they took the dam of the Korban Pesach and mixed it with the dam mila and they put it on the doorpost. And there's a Machlokas Tanoim. Which side of the doorpost was it on? Was it on the outside, facing the Mitzrim and the Hoya Hadam Laos to the Mitzrim to say, we're no longer afraid of you. We're no longer beaten by you, we stand on our own? Or was it placed on the inside of the doorpost and the message was for them? Same exact idea, that we have the ability to stand up and be our own. They broke the shackles of the Mitzri oppression by defeating the Mitzri god, by taking that representation, saying, we're our own people. And that begins the transformation. Avde Paro to Avde Hashem, because there can be no duplicity. Either you're an Eved to Paro, or you're an Evet Hashem, and we had to educate. Hashem had to educate them to no longer be Avadim Upar. That's Korban Pesach. What is the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelachem? It's a very similar idea. HaChodesh HaZelachem says, an Evet, like an Isha, does she have mitzvahs asei shazman grama? Does she have time-bound mitzvahs? No, neither does an Evet. Why not? Why does an Evet not have time-bound mitzvahs? The answer is because if you're an Evet, who controls your time? You don't control your time. Your master does. You have no dominion and control over time. And thus, you're not chayev. An Evet Kanani is not chayev mitzvahs shazman grama. What's the lesson of HaChodesh HaZelachem? The lesson is, you're no longer avadim. You're no longer under the dictates of someone else's time. You control time. Time is yours, under your control, and you dictate that destiny. You decide when is Rosh Chodesh. You decide when is the Chag. That is the first mitzvah. And that, once again, psychologically, is the, if you will, the gateway to get Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. You control time. And finally, Bris Milah. Because the Jews, the Midrash says, did not want to do Bris Milah. They wanted to assimilate, be like the Mitzrayim. And Hashem says, no. There needs to be sacrifice, literally, physical sacrifice with blood that links you not to your Mitzrayim brethren right now, but links you back to your forefather, Avraham Avinu. And that's the Mitzvah of Milah. Karban Pesach Sur Meira. Destroy the Mitzrayim God. This Mila Asay Tov, link back to the others. The ultimate common denominator here in all of these facets, I think, is a real sense of Mesiras Nefesh. B'nai Yisrael has to do something not easy. Imagine the Nazi oppressors, and imagine stepping up. The Nazi oppressors taking their symbols and destroying their symbols when you have no real knowledge that you'll succeed. But that was their challenge. That was their mission. And that's how they start breaking that Evet mentality. A sense of Mesiras Nefesh. And I remember, right after 9/11, my Rebbe, I was here, my Rebbe in America got up to speak a week or two after 9/11 to give chizuk. Most of you were pretty young, 9/11. But his message, which I remember to this day, I heard it on tape, his message was one of the core midos. There are midos in the world. And they're there for the taking. Qualities that are there for the taking. And Goyim can take them, or we can take them. If we don't take them, then the Gentiles will take them. And he pointed out that there's one midah, think 9/11, that Jews, the Orthodox Jews, don't have on such a strong level. And if we don't seize a midah, then they're going to seize the midah. And the midah that he pointed to was Mesiras Nefesh. To really give up of yourself for something great, for something bigger than you, for your religion. And those of us who live in large communities, whether it's on the East Coast, on the West Coast, north of the border, we live in communities that it's very, very easy to be Torah Jews. The number of kosher eateries, no big deal. Keeping kosher food, shuls, Shabbos, mikvaos, it's easy. It's no Mesiras Nefesh. When my father-in-law, that 45 years ago, had his first job out of college as an accountant, he went to work. Had the job in October, went to work. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. It's 3 o'clock in October. Shabbos starts pretty early. At 3 o'clock, he starts getting ready to leave the office. His first week and his first job. His boss tells him, where are you going? He says, I'm a Sabbath observer. I have to leave to observe the Sabbath. Boss says, you're not going anywhere. He says, I have to. He says, my father says, I'll come in on Sunday and do the work. And his boss says, if you leave now, you come in tomorrow to do the work. And if you don't come in tomorrow, Shabbos, then don't bother coming in on Monday. And my father left at 3 o'clock, obviously didn't come in on Shabbos, and he didn't bother coming on Monday. Job was done. It was Mesiris Nefesh. And that's only 40 years ago. 70 years ago, it's much, much more difficult. Today, no Mesiris Nefesh. Very little Mesiris Nefesh. And my Rebbe said, after 9/11, the one thing that the Goyim have, and I'm speaking here about the Bnei Yishmael, they had in a very perverted and sick way, Mesiris Nefesh. They're willing to get on a plane and kill themselves for whatever their perverted cause is. They're willing to strap themselves up with bombs and get on a bus in a sick and perverted way for their cause. It's not normal. It's abnormal. But it is a midah of Mesiris Nefesh. And that's what Bnei Yisrael had, the get out of jail free sign, ticket, out of Mitzrayim. Bris Milah. It's Mesiris Nefesh. Karban Pesach in the face of your oppressors. That's Mesiris Nefesh. And what I want to talk to you a little bit about is this concept of Mesiris Nefesh. And I want to single out right now. I don't know if this is the last sikha for everyone, but we have a group of Shana Bet guys that are leaving. And some have left already, and a group are leaving. Aaron Block, Shlomo David, Gabi Eliazadeh, Gary Fetter, Ezra Karakowski, Asi Kent, Mickey Levinson, Zalman Moses, Rimmler, Rakowski, Shalom. Shalom. Anyone else?
Shandell.
Oh, Ellie Sandell. I'm not there, is it? Anyway, every one of these guys, I've been saying a lot of goodbyes there. Saying a lot of goodbyes. And the theme that I hear from these guys, I heard it yesterday a few times. I heard it over and over again. Best decision of my life. Great decision. And I look at these guys last year, and I look at these guys this year. And the decision to come back was a decision that was defined by Mesiris Nefesh. Because Shana Aleph is for everyone. Everyone does Shana Aleph. It's part of the educational stream. Shana Aleph is like 11th grade, like 12th grade, so 13th grade is Shana Aleph. It's what we do. That's good. It's great. It's important. Shana Bet is when a person goes the extra yard. His Moser Nefesh gives up a little bit. But it's an amazing thing. Because when a person psychologically says, I'm giving something up, I'm investing of myself, he makes darn well sure that he's going to cash in on his investment. When you're invested, no one wants to have a losing investment. And you look and you see the investment and what it produces and what it pays off, the dividends it pays. It's an unbelievable thing. And that sense of Mesiris Nefesh is really what it's all about. A desire not to be average, not to be ordinary, to be greater, to be bigger, to be a growth-oriented person who's willing to push and go the extra yard. A willingness to sacrifice. And no doubt, You see what gets produced. It's an unbelievable thing. But to be honest with you, the guys in this room have even more mysterious methods. Because they would have gotten a very nice shout out as a result of coming Shana Bet and leaving in January. But the guys who I'm not going to mention, but we know who they are, were choosing to stay longer. With the same exact hashkafa, but one step further. A sense of more mesiras nefesh. A bigger investment. A greater investment, knowing I could go back now with my buddies. No problem, and I get an amazing shout out. And that's mesiras nefesh. And when a person's moser nefesh, the dividends are always there. And applies to Shana Aleph just as much. I just said Shana Aleph is 13th grade. It's what everyone does. But the reality is, and we know this so well, you look around this room, and you look at people that are mostly nefesh, that are pushing themselves, that are going the extra yard. There are people in this room that are doing what they're supposed to do. And then the people in this room that are doing perhaps less than they're capable of. It's the same concept. A person's moser nefesh pushes himself, invests of himself, he's going to produce dividends. He's going to get from it. If he squeezes out every minute, every hour, every seder, it's going to produce. And it's not just in learning, and it's not just in davening. There are guys who are moser nefesh, working hard to try and keep the base medrash clean and organized. There are guys who are moser nefesh to help out in the Chadar Ochel at 2 o'clock tonight. We'll see who's moser nefesh to help bring stuff up to the bus. It's all part of building. When you invest in giving up of yourself, you build yourself. You become great. That sense of mesiras nefesh. It was a very, very, what I thought was interesting and bizarre conversation. I'll tell you why it was bizarre in a second. That I was a part of. Me and Bird with about 8 guys in the Chadar Ochel. And the topic of the conversation was TV, movies, and the yeshiva's computer policy, or lack thereof. And it was an interesting discussion. And I want to share with you some of the thoughts that went through my head. A lot of you have computers. It says on the books, in the yeshiva rule book, no computers. And the yeshiva made a conscious decision not to enforce that rule. You'll ask me why it's in the book, it's not being enforced. It's a kasha that I have terutzim for, but I don't get into right now. You'll ask me, what's pshat? What's pshat in the policy? Why not enforce it? Why yes? What's the idea? And the idea, I honestly spent months thinking about this issue. Hours discussing with my colleagues. And the bottom line is, felt very torn about what's the right thing to do. On the one hand, you're all college student age. You live with computers. They're your right arm. And I wouldn't want to amputate your right arm. So why would I divest you of your computer? Plus, you're going to college, you're going to be with technology, so you better learn how to use it responsibly. Has good uses and bad uses. Productive and deleterious. So, let's see if it gets used responsibly. And we had this conversation. about Talmud computer usage. And obviously, in yeshiva, the laptop becomes, it's not used for writing essays and papers and chashuv and things like that. It's used as an entertainment center. And sometimes the movies and TV shows are not what I would call, perhaps even what you would call. The conversation was certain shows, I don't even know the shows, but the one that stuck out was a big hot topic, was the Game of Thrones, which the chakir was, is it like... like, it's not a kosher show. Not a kosher show. Kuli amalo pligi. That wasn't the debate. Wasn't the debate. And then they're talking about, again, shows that I'm not familiar... Is there something with an arrow? Whatever, there's shows, all the names of shows. And we have Talmidim, like, who are like, mamish addicted. Admittedly addicted. Admittedly addicted, and then there are those who are not, they claim they're not addicted, but they can't miss a single episode of the 16 different series that they're watching, but they're not addicted. And they have it all, like, I actually went online this afternoon just to see, like, symptoms of addictions. Various rationalization techniques and the like. And they were all there. All there. Who's laughing? All right, Brownman, take it easy. And to be honest with you, I decided, when we decided not to enforce the policy, you became the guinea pigs. You became the guinea pigs. The litmus test. Can 18-year-old yeshiva boys handle technology responsibly? Can they limit themselves? Can they use it judiciously? And I don't want to generalize, but if I went ahead and really looked at the data, and I go and compare the ratio of my remarks to the Sefer, there are those in this room who are mostly nefesh, who are pushing themselves for a minyan every day. There are those here who are learning before morning Seder, who have goals of finishing Siddharm and Mishnayis, Shas Mishnayis, who are chazering, they're learning, they're bekiyas, that are getting really into it. And there are those who are paralyzed, who are stuck, who are really stuck. Think about where you fit. You're the guinea pig in this experiment. I'm generally, I'll tell you the truth, there's a kasha on me. Why did I do this experiment? The goal is, let's see if they're responsible. Let's see if they can handle it. In my own house, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't take that approach in my own house, with myself, my own children. Because in my own house, my computer, I don't say, I have a friend of mine who has a shita. He says he has kids, teenagers, above teenagers. I don't believe in filtering the computer. I don't believe in it, it's a shita. Because I want to educate my kids to make the right choices. And maybe they'll slip, but I can't control their environment all the time, so I'm going to educate them to make the right choices, and hopefully they will. It's a shita. It's an approach. I don't take that approach because the risks are phenomenally great. And therefore, I chose to have a filter and have a computer that the ISP is a kosher ISP, so nothing can get in. That's what we'll call treif. Because I don't trust myself, and I don't trust my teenage kids. But I trusted you. And again, I ask you to think, are you acting judiciously, responsibly? Are you being most enough or not? And the reason I dedicated the sikha to Max, you mind? So Max came into my shir one morning. Do you really mind? Can I really say, lay it all out? Max, we all know, is a beloved Talmud of this yeshiva. A fine young man. Very sweet guy, good guy. And Max, notoriously, has had a challenge, we'll call it. So I called him out on it. And he basically said, I'm going to give my computer, my laptop, to the madrich. He's going to hold on to it. And maybe on weekends, I'll get it back. But I need that assist. And that's what I'm going to do. Responsible decision. Good decision. Mature. I kind of pressed him into it. But nonetheless, it's a smart thing to do. And my message to you is, this is not a computer schmooze. It's not what my message is. Just using it as an example. It's as much a schmooze to laud the guys who are in this base medrash at 6:45, 7 a.m. in the morning before Shachris with Chavrusas, who are in Moser Nefesh for their learning. It's as much a schmooze to laud the guys who are helping them clean up the base medrash, who are learning at night, who are chazering their learning. And I'm telling you, a boy who's going to be moser nefesh for his learning and will give up, will put on the side for 1 year some of the things that are distracting, diminishing, impacting what you can take out when you moser nefesh for something. Whole different ballgame. Growth-oriented projects. I challenge you all. The Save Your Seat Club is a beautiful club of Mesivas Nefesh. It's exactly the concept. The early morning learning. Goals in your learning. Everyone, think about a goal. I'm going to go ahead and be Maver Sedra every week with Rashi. I'm going to go ahead and learn and know well 5 Mishnayos a day, 10 Mishnayos a day. In my Bekiyah Shir, I'm not just going to sit and hear my Rebbe read a Gemara and get some of it and not get a lot of it. But I'm going to chazer. It's 10 weeks till Purim. I'm going to take on Maseches Megillah. 3 blot a week. And at my Rebbe's Purim Seuda, I'm going to make a seal on Maseches Megillah. A lot of you are doing that. A lot of you are doing those kinds of things. And you're reaping the benefits. You're making the investments. You'll draw the dividends. But I challenge all of you to be thinking in that direction. Chazara, minyanim, pitching in, chesed, all the whole gamut. Think about what you do in your free time. And is that productive? Is that helping you get up in the morning? Projects. Mastery in your learning. It goes a phenomenally long way. I want to share with you one last Dvar Torah. The LA guys, you know Rav Asher Brander? I read this. I was so taken by the Dvar Torah. I read this from Brander, a friend of mine, and I wanted to share with you all. It's a pasuk from last week's parasha. We're told, Perek Zayin pasuk Tezvav. Lech el paro baboka hine yotzi hamaymar. Hashem tells Moshe, go to the morning, go to Paro. And the pasuk says he's out by the water. Rashi brings a famous medrash. That what was Paro doing by the water? He was urinating. Why? Because Paro wanted everyone to believe that he was a god. And gods don't relieve themselves. So he always sneak away when no one was looking. When he was human, acting human. And that's what he was doing. The Chafetz Chaim asks the following question. Why does Hashem make us to have to relieve ourselves? It's pretty disgusting. The odor is foul. We're constantly having to do this. He couldn't have made us without this biological need to remove waste? Why? And the Chafetz Chaim says that the reason Hashem made us this way is because He wants us to understand our limitations, our frailty. It's very humbling when multiple times a day you have to sit or stand in a less than becoming position to relieve yourselves. When you start thinking about that, it's quite humbling. The Chafetz Chaim asks, okay, good. So we need that. So why not once a month? Once a month, let's be like the Midas of the world. Monthly. Why multiple times a day? And says the Chafetz Chaim, because Hashem understood that if it's spread out, we'd lose the message. So for 2-3 weeks, we'd think we're godly. We'd think we'd get gaivadik. So every day, multiple times a day, you're humbled. You realize who you are and what you are. Brandon points out, I wasn't aware of this, but there's an art out there. There's a brand of art. It's called scatological art. One day, you'll look up the word scatological. But scatological art is basically taking human waste and the production of it and turning it into art. And you'll go to Chashuv museums and you'll see the scatological art section. It's pretty gross. There's a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin. Daf Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara writes as follows. Maisa B'Nachris Achaz. There was a woman. A Gentile woman. Shehoisa Chola B'Yoter, who was very sick. Amra. And she said, if whoever's up there heals me, I will go ahead and worship every single Avodah Zarah in the world. And that's exactly what she did. And then she got to one Avodah Zarah called the Avodah Zarah of Pu'or. Do you know what the Avodah Zarah of Pu'or is? It's an Avodah Zarah of scatology. Basically, the Avodah Zarah calls for removing your weighs-down clothing and basically depositing human excrement on the aisle. That's the Avodah Zarah. So she gets to Pa'or, and she's told by the Pa'or priest, how do you do this? This is what you got to do. And she responds, better I should die of that illness than go ahead and engage in this Avodah Zarah. That's the end of the Gemara. But you know what? B'nai Yisrael worshipped Pa'or. Chumash describes it, and then they went ahead and violated the B'nos Moav. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, what kind of Avodah Zarah is this? What a sick Avodah Zarah. What is it all about? It doesn't make any sense. Like, even the most depraved idol worshiper, like, what's the pshat? It's got to have a pshat. And he had a beautiful insight. This Avodah Zarah is basically about idolatry. It's about telling man, I am greater than the gods. I defecate on the gods. I release my waste on the gods. I am on top of the gods. It's the most godless of worships, placing man above the higher of God, man above God, an elevation of self. And that's exactly the message of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the antithesis. Yetzias Mitzrayim was about a conversion of a people from Avdei Paro to Avdei Hashem. And that requires not dumping on the God, Rachman al-Islam, but to go ahead and being subservient to the God. And in today's world, and this is the topic of a future smooth, no doubt, but today's world is the world, a godless world, a world where God is very, very hidden. And man is lauded, man is put on the pedestal, and to borrow a catchy phrase, whether it's idolatry or iPod or iPad, it's about the I. And the challenge for us is no doubt to understand our place in this wonderful universe and to really get the most out of it is to be Moser Nefesh, to be that Eved Hashem. And I challenge all of you, as you think about how to navigate, whether you're Shana Bet leaving, Shana Bet staying, alumni, Baruch Hashem coming back, and Moser Nefesh as well, and Shana Aleph for sure. Think about Mishchu Ukulachem Tzom. Withdraw your hands from the Avodah Zarah, whatever it might be, and take the Tzom. Take the Tzom. Take the Kedusha. Maximize, make the most, and Be'ez Hashem, become the true Avdei Hashem that you can be. I want to wish you all a wonderful couple of days. May Lot. Enjoy the break. Enjoy the beauty. And come back strong next week.
Anyone who is in Vermaivad or of Mirsky's Vod, we're meeting here in the McLaughlin.